Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 20th of April 2012. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. And your readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. Now, the announcements for this week. And we start with What's On. Here are several events in and around Winchester. There's a selection of gardens open as part of the National Garden Scheme in the next week or so. You can go to Abbey Cottage, Itchin Abbas, on Wednesday the 25th of April from noon to 5 p.m. Ash Park, near Ash, on Wednesday the 24th and Sunday the 29th of April from 2 to 6 p.m. Beechenwood Farm, Odium, on Wednesday, April the 25th, from 2 till 5 p.m. And Walbury, Lower Froyle, on Saturday and Sunday, the 28th and 29th of April, from 2 to 5 p.m.
I won't look
the at current you. Exhibition of the works of Jane Bowen at the Winchester Discovery Centre continues until the 20th of May. And on stage, at the Winchester Theatre Royal, from the 25th to the 28th of April, at 8 p.m, Catherine Hunter is starring in Kafka's Monkey. And from the 1st to the 5th of May, Winchester Operatic Society is performing a new interpretation of HMS Pinafore. The box office for the Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. At the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, Dirty Dancing continues until the 28th of April, and then from the 1st to the 26th of May, you can see Brian Connolly in Oliver. And the box office number for the Mayflower is 02380711811. That's 02380711811. A reminder that the Winchester Talking News AGM takes place at Littleton Millennium Hall at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, the 9th of May. We hope to see as many of you as possible. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th of April at 6 a.m. and begins at 8:09 p.m. On Wednesday the 25th of April, it ends at 5:50 a.m. and begins at 8:19 p.m. Now we come to the main headlines of the Hampshire Chronicle. And this week they are: Bomb Scare Brings City to a Halt, On Their Marks for the London Marathon, and Long-Standing Stalwarts Stand Aside at Local Election. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Jean.
Bomb Scare Brings City to a Halt. Law courts and businesses evacuated, roads closed after specific bomb threat. It caused havoc and paralysed much of central Winchester, but police insist that public safety had to come first. Following a bomb alert, officers cordoned off a section of the city centre and evacuated hundreds of people, closing offices, shops and pubs for most of Monday afternoon. Police are now hunting the hoaxer who sparked the emergency at the city's Crown Court. They said they received a specific threat by telephone that it was a target. A 100-metre exclusion zone was set up and the area was evacuated at 1 p.m. Hundreds of staff were ordered to leave Hampshire County Council's HQ. Military bomb disposal experts and police sniffer dogs with their officers in protective helmets were called in to work through the court searching for the device. Extra police were drafted in and incident support unit ambulances put on standby as part of Winchester's emergency plan. Police said the call, which also identified Swindon Crown Court as a target, was treated as genuine, although ultimately a hoax. Chief Inspector James Fulton, Winchester's divisional commander, said such calls are handled by expert officers whose job it is to sort real alerts from fake ones, using a threat index. In any position such as this, when we have specific information, then the safety of the public is paramount, he said. The exclusion zone included several busy roads, including Southgate Street, which was later reopened to cars but not pedestrians. The streets taped off with a high street at Southgate Street, St Clement Street, Romsey Road at the railway bridge, and by Peninsula Barracks, Sussex Street and Upper High Street, outside the County Council, Tower Street and Staple Gardens. Chief Inspector Fulton said, "You have to strike a balance with trying to keep the city running normally," he said. But many shopkeepers lost an afternoon's trade, including Judith Burnett of the old-fashioned Sweetie Shop in High Street. She said, "I know the police have a job to do, and it's difficult if it's a bomb. But if it's not safe to have businesses open, why is it safe to have someone drive past in a car?" Tony Wyman, owner of Childhood's Dream in Southgate Street, said, "We need to know the threat level and if the response was proportional or if the police overreacted." One business that saw a sudden rush, only for it to be taken away, was the Westgate Hotel in Romsey Road. Co-owner Guy Carpenter said many evacuated staff headed to the pub, and he served about 25 people in quick succession. Hotel Divin in Southgate Street was also evacuated, and some guests were temporarily unable to retrieve their cars. Many other motorists were stuck in jams. Meanwhile, prisoners in court were driven back to jail. The cordon was lifted after 4 hours. A joint investigation is now underway with Wiltshire Police to find the hoaxer. Chief Inspector Fulton added, "This person disrupted a busy city and the community, absorbed valuable time of police officers and specialist services, and many business hours and people's livelihoods have been affected. The significance of this incident can't be overstated."
On their marks for the London Marathon. It will be a day of reckoning for Olympic hopeful Louise Damon. The Winchester athlete will be among thousands taking part in this weekend's London Marathon. While most will be happy just to complete the gruelling 26-mile run to raise money for charity, Louise's Olympic dream depends on her putting on an impressive performance. Sunday's race is her last chance to secure a place on Team GB for the Olympic marathon event by beating several of her rivals. But ahead of the big day, she has been taking time out to give advice to marathon running students at Peter Simmons College, where she works as a PE teacher. Louise has been helping Kirsty Nash of Colton Common, who was recently selected to carry the Olympic torch in July. Kirsty is a younger carer for her sister, Sophie, who has cerebral palsy and autism, and is running the marathon with her mother to try and raise £5,000 for young carers' charity Honeypots. She said it was great to get some advice from Louise and a real thrill to meet such an elite athlete. She hasn't ever run the marathon as a bumblebee, though, which is what Mum and I are going to be doing. Meanwhile, Anthony Scott of Weald Road Medstead is taking on the challenge to help his 8-year-old goddaughter Alice, who was born prematurely and is severely disabled. Alice attends the Pace Centre in Buckinghamshire, and Mr. Scott is running to raise funds to make sure the special needs school continues its work. Meanwhile, Winchester City Councillor Kim Gottlieb is taking part in his fifth and final marathon to raise funds for the Cystic Fibrosis Trust. Councillor Gottlieb of Avington said, "With all due respect to my colleagues, some of them at least, it's a struggle to avoid standard issue Councillor Paunch, but training in the countryside around Winchester is especially enjoyable and inspiring." Winchester resident David Howell, 60, is running the London Marathon for the 17th time and having taken part in around 40 in total. It will be the 8th time he's run for the Multiple Sclerosis Society. His 34-year-old daughter suffers with the condition which affects 100,000 people in the UK. Mr. Howells of Coppice Close, Teg Down, a retired director of corporate services for the Hampshire Fire and Rescue, said, "Once diagnosed, MS stays with you for life. Its cause is unknown and a cure has yet to be identified, so research continues." Mr. Howells has set himself a target of £500, but has already raised around £650.
Long-standing stalwarts stand aside at local elections. Councillors join Leader Beckett in Exodus. It will be the end of an era at Winchester City Council at next month's local council elections. Former council leader and one of the longest-serving councillors, Alan Mitchell, is stepping down from his seat in St Barnabas. First elected in 1971, he rose to lead the Lib Dems when they controlled the council in the mid-1990s, before he became the mayor for the millennium. Despite being ousted from St Barnabas in 2006, he regained a seat just 2 years later, but has now decided to call time on his political career. Councillor Mitchell said he felt it was time to go because the Lib Dems have a strong candidate in the running to replace him. He said, "We had a candidate last year, Anne Weir, who was very good and ran an excellent campaign. She would be a real talent on the council and we thought it was an opportunity for her." He added, "I have enjoyed my time on the council. One of my favourite memories was when I first got elected in 1971, and another would be when I was the Millennium Mayor. I have learned a tremendous amount and had the opportunity to chair some committees, particularly this last year with the Audit Committee." Councillor Mitchell is not the only long-standing councillor to step aside. With Lib Dem Ray Love leaving St Paul and independent Jean Hamilton not contesting her seat in Bishop's Waltham. Council leader George Beckett has already announced he is standing aside at Compton and Otterbourne to run for the new position of Hampshire Police Commissioner, while Councillor J.C. Jackson is the final councillor stepping down, leaving Littleton and Hairstock. Councillor Hamilton said she was stepping down because she felt it was the right time to go after 17 years on the council. She said, "It's time Bishop's Waltham had a younger candidate with fresh ideas, and you tend to sign up for 4 more years, and I thought that was pushing my luck a bit. But it is Council Love's seat that will be one of the most interesting battlegrounds, as former parliamentary candidate Martin Todd aims to retain St Paul for the Lib Dems in his first attempt at the City Council. He goes up against Lib Dem defector Alexis Fall, now standing for the Conservatives, and Labour candidate Nigel Fox, a city councillor in the 1980s, who is a prominent union representative for teachers. Councillor Love had been unhappy about the direction of the Lib Dems nationally in coalition with the Conservatives. He had considered standing down last year. He was unavailable for comment. Labour is putting up candidates for every seat contested, despite having just one representative on the City Council, Chris Pines. But they have one of the youngest candidates in William Cooper in the St Michael ward, who is currently a journalism student at the University of Winchester."
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. And first, it is my sad duty to let you all know of the death of Mary and Ken Milne, both at the age of 84. Mary died on the 7th of April and Ken on the 11th. Mary was involved with Winchester Talking News from the very beginning, and you will know her name, of course, because she was the contact if anything was wrong with tapes or memory sticks. She was always happy to chat to a listener and would end the call by saying, "God bless." They were a devoted couple, and Ken would always step in as listener's contact if needed. And the following deaths have also been announced. Buckley, Michael Patrick Buckley, peacefully at home, aged 70. Burchett, Captain Percy Ernest Burchett, peacefully in Shannon Court, Hindhead, aged 90. Carter, Charles William Carter, peacefully at home, aged 68. Clark, Marjorie Clark, in hospital, aged 90. Geary, Gloria Valerie Geary, at Marion Hill Residence, Pembroke, aged 71. Hillary, John Dudley Hillary, peacefully, aged 89. Holmes, Sylvia Mary Holmes, aged 76, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Jolly, Vicky Jolly, at home, aged 45. MacLeod, Gladys Patricia MacLeod, peacefully aged 93. O'Connell, Dave O'Connell, aged 58. Pickett, Albert Edward Pickett, peacefully at home, aged 95. Roberts, Rose Mary Roberts, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 82. And finally, Taylor, Doreen Mary Taylor, peacefully, aged 89. And now we go over to Jean for Christian comment.
And this week it's written by Mary Gray and is headed From Galilee to the Gospel. Remembering the fated voyage of the Titanic is rarely out of the news or off the TV screens these days, and we in Winchester or Southampton feel especially close. For example, the memorial in Southampton Gardens to the engineers who never left their post during the crisis. The sheer magnificence of the vessel is in proportion to the tragedy of its loss. While there is still personal sorrow for those connected with the voyagers who perished, and some precious memories for the families of survivors, we feel today far removed from the class structure of the time and the powerful conviction of the travellers that this ship was unsinkable. Now we are far more aware of the vulnerability of life at sea that eluded the consciousness of the Titanic experience. And this was certainly uppermost in the lives of the fishermen of the Sea of Galilee in New Testament times. Yes, the Easter experience belonged to Jerusalem, but the angels at the tomb directed the astonished followers of Jesus to Galilee, to the sea where it all began. Storms on the Sea of Galilee could arise unexpectedly, and we know that these fishermen were often terrified. Vulnerability to storms, as well as to the success or failure of catching fish, framed the contours of their lives until they became followers of Jesus in proclaiming the coming of the kingdom of God throughout the villages around the lake. In Brittany recently, I was aware of that same vulnerability in the stories of the Celtic monks, who for a period of more than 100 years sailed in their frail coracles from Britain to found monasteries and hermitages through this region. And it was by the same sea that they re-encountered Jesus. The dream of the kingdom appeared to have failed, and they had begun to take up their old occupation of fishing, but without much success, until they met Jesus, when their nets were filled to overflowing. In that famous breakfast by the shore, over the sharing of bread and fish, the dream of the kingdom is restored, their ministry confirmed. If they had never had the experience of sailing the Sea of Galilee, could they have ever made a success of spreading the gospel by sea voyages? Remembering these voyages and the many shipwrecks of St. Paul, like recalling the Titanic saga, is a stern reminder of human vulnerability to the laws of nature, to its limits and finiteness, yet to human dependence on nature, for food, for water, and for the survival of life itself. The memory of Jesus feeding his followers by the shore is integral to the Easter message of recreation.
We continue with letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian.
And it's from Keith Webb, and is entitled, "Banning Cars Would Be a Ridiculous Idea." "Sir, read Rupert Pitt's letter of April the 12th. One of the most amusing things about the Chronicle is reading correspondence from NIMBYs. The problem is they oppose their pet hates, but rarely suggest satisfactory, well-thought-out alternatives. Criticism is easy and all too often fed by self-interest. Last week we had our usual crop of protesters about the motocross, new housing sites, a perennial favourite, development of Peter Simmons, and the primary school places. But pride of place must go to the We Must Have Fewer Cars Brigade. How does Rupert Pitt propose to cut the number of cars? Is his, like mine, a two-car household? Most probably if he lives in Park Road. Presumably he expects others to divest themselves of their cars and buy bicycles, or perhaps horses. If we halve the number of cars, what effect does he think this would have on Winchester shops and trade? Car manufacture is one of this country's success stories, and thousands of jobs are dependent on cars. They need servicing, new tyres, MOTs, fuel, and for many provide the convenience that we've earned through hard work. My wife and I live on the top of a hill, and being well into retirement, cycles are not an option, especially as I have a metal knee. The cost of public transport is prohibitive and often inconvenient. If two people travel together, the cost by train is hugely more expensive as going by car, and allowing for travelling time at each end can take twice as long. Those who use cars do not do so to annoy Mr. Pitt, but often get to work and in our leisure time spend money perhaps on eating out or shopping and helping the economy. Given the size of the average weekly shopping basket, carrying that home by public transport would be impossible. Those of us who have earned enough money to run cars deserve to be able to use them, provided we do so legally. And the idea of banning cars on Sundays is absolutely ridiculous. And that's from Keith Webb of Quarry Road, Winchester.
This is a letter from Graham Wren. "Motocross decision was the right one. Sir, I read with interest your reports on the motocross, which is near to my home in Kingsworthy. I am pleased that permission was granted and not at all surprised by the not in my backyard comments from people who, quite frankly, ought to get out more. In this area, we seem to breed the complainers. The comments by Mr. Worthington are bizarre when he claims that the motocross will blight the lives of thousands living in Winchester. I have visited the track on many occasions to watch events, though I have never ridden it. If anyone were to visit, rather than just complain, they would see families not only watching, but riding. Little ones can ride their first bikes in a safe environment, and there are plenty of marshals and medical staff, for it is a well-run track. It's a sensible idea by parents to do this rather than have their kids on village greens and garage areas annoying people. They can't win, can they? And parents don't make this choice lightly, as the cost of a bike, protective gear and transport is a big commitment. Some people wrongly think a noisy motorcycle must be ridden by a teenage thug with a string of convictions. Moving up the age range, teenagers race, giving them an interest, something to look forward to, a purpose in their lives, saving money and getting Saturday jobs to buy parts. This is character building, and if the complainers looked at the wider picture, then we may have a better Britain, not a broken one. No one is committing crime here, Mr. Brine. Unemployment in this area for the under-25s has increased by 18% in the last year, so we need to support our youth, Mr. Brine. I hope you read this, as you are not a supporter of this tract, but perhaps you can change your mind. In this semi-rural area, we all experience noise. I have a train track, the A34 and the M3. I heard the Matterley Bowl concert from my house, but I didn't complain. We have a shooting club on Sundays, but we don't complain. We must live and let live and accept people doing their sports. Maybe some of the complainers should find a pastime, or, if not, just turn the radio up a notch and smile. Graham Wren, Kingsworthy.
And Jackie Kirby writes about builders who left their mark in the walls of Winchester. Sir, having read the letter from R. Coombs in the Chronicle of April the 5th and seeing the photograph in the April the 12th issue, I am pretty sure that my late father, Len Cox, was responsible for the St. Cross flint face. Back in the mid to late 1960s, I vividly remember visiting him in St. Cross Road whilst he was repairing and rebuilding parts of the flint wall and being shown the face he had placed there. Dad also worked extensively on the flint walls down by the weirs, and I have no doubt that he put the odd face or two in those. When he worked on old buildings, he invariably hid an old Holborn tobacco tin containing a coin or something small appropriate to the date in the chimney stack or cavity, as I think most builders did and possibly still do. He also found various items in old buildings that previous builders had left for their successors to find. Dad was a bricklayer by trade, but over the years moved on to work on lots of flint walls in Winchester and the surrounding areas. I wish now that I had photographed his work, or at least taken more notice of what he told me. And there are two photographs here, one of Len Cox's flint face in St. Cross and one of a face which is shown between Worthy Road and Andover Road, snapped by Jay Feely. And they're quite clearly defined characteristics on the faces, and to my mind one looks rather happy, really, with a smiling mouth, and one looks slightly scared with staring eyes and a mouth that's a bit unsure. Anyway, I'm sure we all have our own interpretations, and this was from Jackie Kirby, Tegdown Meads, Winchester.
Police action more robust than required, says Tony Wyman. Sir, this Monday, Winchester suffered considerable disruption and loss of business due to a bomb threat at the law courts, which now appears to have been a hoax. Because of the Olympics and the Jubilee, the deemed threat level is high. However, it's also legitimate to ask whether the police response was appropriate and proportional, if it is not to become a serious problem over the summer. In this case, the response seemed to be more tailored to a suspect Arndale Centre-type car bomb than a simple bomb threat, and it seems to have been more robust response than was necessary. A better be safe than sorry attitude is too simplistic in this case. An objective of terrorism is to cause disruption and economic pain, and by overreacting the police can do the terrorist job for them. Evacuation of an area can also be an inappropriate response, as concentrating the public in a different area simply makes them vulnerable to a different attack. Indeed, moving them from inside a security perimeter to outside one is often a worst possible response. Why was this threat deemed so serious as to demand a level of evacuation that would seem to be appropriate only to a justifiable belief that a large car bomb had been planted, including identification of a suspect vehicle? Was there a proper threat assessment procedure in place? Was there an appropriate plan of action in place for dealing with threats to the law courts? To the untrained eye, policy seems to be being made up as it went along, with inconsistencies apparent. Why were traffic flows in Southgate Street subject to several changes, and yet the railway unaffected? Masonry falling on the line could, for example, have caused a serious train crash. Did the exclusion zone take into account the local geography and buildings? The economic cost to Winchester and its businesses was significant, and we need answers to these questions. And that's from Tony Wyman of Childhood's Dreams, Southgate Street, Winchester.
From D. Jones, love hearts more like a bitter pill. Sir, who in their right mind at Hampshire County Council, 2 weeks before local elections in a time of austerity, would sanction a love hearts publicity campaign to increase footfall at Winchester Discovery Centre with the inducement of a packet of sweets? Am I alone in considering this a costly, crass and insensitive move when jobs and services are under scrutiny for further cuts? Were there unspent funds lying in the book budget for the 2011-12 financial year to fund such a campaign? I use my library card regularly to access online the Times Digital Archive, for which I am very grateful. A paid annual subscription to the British Library newspaper archive and spasmodic visits to Hampshire Record Office and local studies satisfy my personal research needs. All, I might add, in peace and tranquility formerly to be found at the old Winchester Public Library. Love hearts? Bitter pills to swallow in my book. D. Jones, Charles Close, Appert Spartan.
This letter is written by Peter Stewart and it's headed Prospects Bleak for Young Unemployed. Sir, so, Winchester's youth unemployment rose 18% last year. Meanwhile, City Council leader George Beckett says, I think these figures will turn around because they are driven by the slack in the local economy. That's from the Chronicle, April the 12th. The national trend suggests his optimism is misplaced. In 2003, youth unemployment was 12% and steady. In 2004, it began rising, and today it is 22% and rising each month. That's 500,000 more unemployed young Britons since 2004. So what happened? Answer. In 2004, Parliament opened Britain's borders to the EU and triggered a mass immigration of cheap EU labour. We are witnessing an unprecedented economic and social catastrophe, which will accelerate as unemployment rises, disposable income falls, and collectible income tax drops. The only solution to prevent commonplace rioting is to leave the EU and regain control over who works here. Peter Stewart, Beaver Drive, Bishopstoke.
Looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that is in 1812. Thomas Small of Overton was indicted for an assault on Mr. Charles Wooldridge of Winchester. This was a violent attack, and it is an extraordinary circumstance that the prosecutor, Mr. Wooldridge, was at the very same time Small's solicitor in a chancery suit in which he was engaged. He was sentenced to pay a fine to the King of £5 to find sureties for his good behaviour towards Mr. Wooldridge for 2 years and to be imprisoned until he conforms to this sentence.
100 years ago, 1912, an At Home was given at the Odd Fellows Hall, Winchester, on Thursday under the auspices of the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies. Captain Walter Carey, RN, in the chair, moved a resolution that this meeting protests against the action of those MPs who broke their pledges in voting against the Conciliation Bill. Thanks Major Baring for supporting it and calls upon him to support any measure for enfranchisement of women. In brackets, applause. A terrible disaster has overtaken the world's greatest ship, the White Star Liner Titanic, which left Southampton on Wednesday on her maiden voyage to New York. Shortly after 10 a.m. on Monday, the news reached London that the liner had been in collision with an iceberg. Her nearest land was Cape Race, Newfoundland, distance 350 miles to starboard. On board the vessel were 2,340 souls, including 940 crew.
And 50 years ago, in 1962, a warm welcome has been given to 75 children from Eastleigh's twin French railway town of Villeneuve-Saint-Georges, near Paris, who are on the first exchange visit between the two towns. They were welcomed at the town hall by the mayor, Councillor G. G. Olson, J.P., and will remain in Eastleigh until Monday as guests in local homes under a scheme organised by Mr. G. D. Cox, head of the French department at Barton Peveril Grammar School. Secondly, insufferable delays in obtaining ministry consent for speed limits, traffic signs and other restrictions came in for criticism at Monday's meeting of the Hampshire County Council Roads and Bridges Committee. After hearing that it sometimes took 3 years for a speed limit to be approved by the Ministry of Transport, the committee decided to seek amended legislation, giving more latitude to county highway authorities.
And now, 25 years ago, 1987. Winchester's modest swimmers are expected to object to plans for the rebuilt swimming pool to have a unisex changing area. The working party directing the rebuilding of the recreational centre at North Walls was told that any innovation seems to attract the utmost protest and worry. A single area with individual cubicles would make cleaning easier and improve security, said Mr. Bill Ronan, manager of the centre, which was badly damaged by fire 3 months ago. And secondly, the revolutionary Optica plane has not been ruled out for use by Hampshire Police, a spokesman confirmed this week. The plane has come under close scrutiny since the tragic accident in May 1985, when on the first full day of flying, the aircraft crashed and two officers were killed. The spokesman said, "We are studying a number of fixed-wing aircraft and the Optica is included among this number."
Chronicle comment is read by Margaret and will be followed by First Person, read by Brian.
Bomb threat had to be taken seriously. Questions are being asked over whether police overreached to this week's bomb scare in Winchester. The law courts, where it was claimed a bomb had been planted, was evacuated along with many shops and businesses in the surrounding area. Major city roads were closed as traffic came to a grinding halt. There's no doubt that for some businesses, vital trade was lost, which most can ill afford in the current economic climate. But it's all too easy in hindsight for some to criticise the emergency services for their actions on Monday. Police say they received a specific threat that a bomb was in the law courts. They had no choice, therefore, but to take it seriously. Many more questions would have been asked if it hadn't been treated seriously and a catastrophe occurred. Now the only question remaining is to bring the hoaxer to justice. This weekend, many people from Hampshire will be taking to the streets of the capital to raise vital charity funds in the London Marathon, but for one competitor, Louise Damon, the race is of particular significance. If she is to realise her dream of competing in the London Olympics, she must put in a good performance. We wish her well.
And this week's First Person is Khalid Aziz, which says we're at each other's throats. We are now into the long drawn out period of austerity that surely follows one of the deepest recessions our world has ever been through. The trouble is, fueled by media ever looking for newness, conflict is being encouraged to create good copy. Sadly, our relatively inexperienced government is falling for it and is ending up not where they want it to be. It started with the granny tax, which was about the only revelation to come out of Osborne's budget. Everything else having been leaked, it was immediately seized upon as another example of Tory dastardliness. It was, of course, nothing of the sort, and nowhere near as draconian as portrayed. Then there was the double bombshell of a capping of tax relief on charitable donations and so-called transparency of tax returns for politicians, the latter spawned by an increasingly scratchy campaign for London Mayor. Red Ken is, like many of his ilk before him, happy to use the tools of the capitalist system he vows to bring down for personal advantage. Actually, it's totally reasonable for him to use a service company to receive money from his various interests. Such vehicles help smooth out the often irregular nature of such income. However, it's easy to see how single income source PAYE taxpayers can become incensed by such arrangements, but most of the ire generated is out of sheer envy. Taxation has been compared to plucking a live goose. The idea is to obtain as many feathers with a minimum of hissing and squawking. By that measure, George Osborne isn't doing very well. But the people squawking are not those paying the most tax. Various figures have been bandied about, and each new set immediately rubbished. But it appears that something like 28% of tax is paid by 5% of the population. The rich, arguably, are doing their bit. But they can afford to pay and should pay more, comes the cry from the terraces. Then let you into a secret. Pretty well everyone thinks they pay too much tax. Actually, some of the wealthier people I know say they're content to pay, but what they don't like is paying and then being vilified as fat cats. Capping tax relief on charitable donations is bonkers, though wealthy people do have a choice, and they're not stupid. They usually run their affairs with precision. Cap their tax relief, and they will simply give less. The largest donation when we built our children's hospice, Naomi House, was £500,000. I know tax relief would have been involved. Had tax relief been capped, chances are we wouldn't have received nearly as much. Let's all calm down and accept we're in for a long haul and stop trying to rob Peter to pay Paul. In the end, like nuclear war, that's a zero-sum game.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises five items, and they'll be read round, starting with Margaret, please.
Concrete evidence. It wasn't regarded highly enough to be listed by English Heritage, but the Hockley Viaduct has been lauded from across the Atlantic. The recently published Concrete Planet, The Strange and Fascinating Story of the World's Most Common Man-Made Material, by Robert Corland, knows its mind on the Victorian structure. Mr. Corland hails it as a remarkable structure, the importance of which has not been widely recognised. It is easily the most important concrete structure to have survived from the 19th century, not only for its beauty, but also from the lessons learned from its construction and remarkable durability. The good news is that the 33-arch viaduct has been saved with confirmation of a 1 million cycle path scheme. Belgarum thanks viaduct campaigner Chris Webb of Southgate Street for highlighting the American book published by Prometheus Books of New York, and this is accompanied by a very nice view of the viaduct showing a number of its arches and in a quite bright reddish colour.
And this is the second item from Belgarum, and it's headed An Unlikely Role Model. Lovely pun. A big cat lost one of its 9 lives after a jaguar collided with a bus shelter in Winchester. Bemused shoppers witnessed the silver car roll backwards into the shelter on Saturday, April the 14th, afternoon. It happened right under the eye of King Alfred, whose statue overlooks the parking spaces and bus shelters in the Broadway. The collision shattered a large pane of glass and broke one of the seats, but there were no reports of any injuries. Eyewitness Sarah Sibley, who took pictures of the crash, said nobody was in the vehicle at the time. As a result, it would appear to Belgarum that a suspect handbrake, or the lack of one, might be the likely cause. The vehicle was recovered soon after the collision. The cost of repairing the shelter is not yet known, and there's a splendid photograph of the silver Jaguar right across one lane of the road down by King Alfred and backing into the bus shelter.
And the third item is, Tykes take a dim view. News reaches Belgarum about former Winchester man Chris Perry, well known for his ability to cause court controversy. Some may recall Mr. Perry, whose picture is on the right here, once made local and national headlines by using his Rover 75 car to block a city council dust cart in Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, in 2006. It was in a one-man protest against the bin man's early starts. He moved to Yorkshire and started a community blog called World's Eye View and has managed to upset some local dignitaries so much that magistrates passed an antisocial behaviour order against him for 10 years. Mr. Perry has now issued a High Court writ saying his journalistic behaviour has not justified the restrictions of an ASBO. Such orders are normally imposed for people who regularly use verbal abuse, commit criminal damage or vandalism, write graffiti or hang around in menacing gangs.
Another plea for Percy. He's gone. After 30 years and giving his name to a busy roundabout, Percy Hobbs has disappeared. The pub at Mournhill closed some 18 months ago and the building has been taken over by the Neptune Kitchen Showroom. But we ask again, what has happened to Percy? Has he been painted over or taken down? As soon as Belgarum can find out, you will be first to know. And there's a picture of the pub sign, which is now advertising Neptune Kitchen Showroom.
The last of Belgarum's pieces is concerned with a brief bit of business. New Alresford Town Council has a bit of a reputation for having drawn-out meetings, with the occasional fiery confrontation thrown in. But last Thursday's, April the 12th, gathering certainly bucked the trend, lasting just over 45 minutes. And City Councillor Simon Cook, who represents Alresford, said it was one of the shortest he had ever been to.
And we continue with items of general news, led by Brian, please.
And that is drought zone declared. It's official. Hampshire is suffering a drought. Environment agency chiefs have declared the county a drought zone amid fears the crisis could last into next year. However, Southern Water bosses are sticking to their guns, saying they have no plans to introduce a hosepipe ban in Hampshire, despite exceptionally low levels of water in parts of the county, including the internationally renowned River Avon. The Environment Agency has included Hampshire alongside parts of the Midlands and South West on its drought map, following months of dry weather. A spokesman said, "Our decision is based on several factors, including average long-term rainfall, plus groundwater levels and the state of underground reservoirs. By declaring that Hampshire is now officially in drought, we shall have drawn a line in the sand. Our decision will trigger a number of actions with our various partners. We will now be holding more regular meetings with water companies and making sure that they're looking at their own drought plans." The Environment Agency says public water supplies are unlikely to be hit, but is reiterating calls for consumers to combat the condition by using scarce water wisely. Trevor Bishop, head of Water Resources, warned that the drought could stretch into 2013. He said, "A long-term drought lasting until Christmas and perhaps beyond now looks more likely. We've had some welcome rain recently, but the problem hasn't gone away. We would urge everyone to use water wisely now and help prevent more serious impacts next year. However, current water levels in Hampshire are not sufficiently low to warrant an immediate hosepipe ban in the county, according to Southern Water. A spokesman said, "We don't have any plans for restrictions across Hampshire, but we are monitoring the situation very closely. We are asking all customers to show restraint when using water. The drought, which now affects most of England, is the result of two exceptionally dry winters. The lack of rain is taking its toll on the environment and farmers, causing problems for wildlife, wetlands and crop production. The Environment Agency is urging businesses, water companies and consumers to use water wisely. The Hampshire Avon, which flows through Fording Bridge and Ringwood and supports rare trout and salmon species, is among the rivers described as exceptionally low."
Residents call for junction change, frustrated over delay in improvements. When traffic is heavy, it can take them around half an hour just to leave their own street. Residents in Oliver's Battery Road North are fed up with waiting for road improvements. The problem started a decade ago when the junction with Stanmore Lane in Winchester was altered. It is just a few yards from the larger and busier junction of Romsey Road and Stanmore Lane. Before the changes, which included building a cycle refuge, residents said they could leave their street easily. Yet the queues to enter Romsey Road from Stanmore Lane are now much longer. The knock-on effect is that motorists trying to exit Oliver's Battery Road North are often stuck. There is no other way to leave the road, which feeds into three cul-de-sacs, Monmouth Square, Westminster Gate and Fairfax Close. It also provides the only access for parents dropping pupils at St Peter's Catholic Primary School by car. Amongst the residents leading the campaign for changes in Oliver's Battery Road North is Stanley Jackson. He said the Stanmore Lane Cycle Refuge is the only one of its kind in Winchester, but is rarely used because it is on a steep hill. He added that they tried to contact their county councillor, Frenette Dickens, to overturn the changes. However, she had not replied, despite several attempts, he said. The Chronicle also tried to contact her without success on the matter. Mr. Jackson said, "I would contend that the existing junction has singularly failed in its objective of encouraging cycling in Winchester, but has blighted the lives of hundreds of the residents in this area of Winchester." This week, Hampshire County Council confirmed that it was taking another look at the junction. Councillor Mel Kendall, executive member for Environment and Transport, said, "Proposals for a scheme to provide two lanes at the top of Stanmore Lane to its junction with Romsey Road are currently being worked on. Initial investigations have shown that the scheme could be provided within the existing highway, but with the removal of the existing pedestrian centre island. Additional enhancements to improve pedestrian crossing opportunities and the provision of appropriate cycle facilities are also being explored as part of the scheme. It is hoped to implement the scheme in the 2013-14 financial year using local transport plan funds."
City will bloom this year despite drought. Winchester's annual floral summer makeover will continue despite fears over the drought and a possible hosepipe ban. Around 400 hanging baskets will go up at businesses, pubs and homes around the city in May, ensuring Winchester will again be ablaze with flowers. It was feared a potential hosepipe ban could scupper the plans, as it did in 2006, when the City Council cancelled the baskets. But Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, which has taken over the scheme from the council, dismissed concerns over water and confirmed the baskets would go up as usual. Chris Turner, Executive Director of the BID, said, "There is most certainly going to be hanging baskets and we have sourced sustainable compost and water from a local nursery. At the moment there is no hosepipe ban and the nursery will be making sure there is a reliable source of rainwater." Despite experiencing the second driest 12 months on record, Hampshire is not currently under a hosepipe ban, although Southern Water has said the county will be under constant review. There has not been such a ban in the county since 1976. Professor Turner added the flowers would be an important part of this year's Olympic and Diamond Jubilee celebrations. He said, with the Olympic torch coming through Winchester, the city centre will be on television, so we want to make sure the baskets look great. The £40,000 scheme is free for businesses after the BID decided to include the cost in their annual levy to members. The baskets are part of the annual Winchester in Bloom competition, which celebrates floral arrangements in the commercial and private sectors, with a children's competition also running. Professor Turner added there would be an official opening event for the baskets this year in late May.
Civic Group has differing views over town's future. An Alresford Civic Group has resigned from the Town Council's planning committee over concerns about the future of Arlbury Park. Jan Field, chairman of the Alresford Society, said there were differing views over potential development at the park. She said, "I thought one of our roles was to take a wider interest on what we describe as the look and life of Alresford. It was one of these situations where the committee thought it was important that we retain our independence. So that's it." A public meeting will be held next Thursday, that's April the 26th, to discuss the plans for sports pitches at Arlbury Park. The Town Council wants to buy land next to the existing field for the local rugby club. Miss Field has written to the Council querying the suitability of the land for pitches and the impact on local residents. The meeting will be at Alresford Recreation Centre, Arlbury Park, starting at 7:30 p.m. Meanwhile, the Town Council has been criticised for having local groups sitting on committees at all. Robin Atkins, chairman of Alresford Town Trust, questioned the value of members of other societies sitting on the committees and the council hearing reports from other bodies. Speaking at a council meeting last Thursday, he said, "The Alresford Society, I believe, should not have been on the planning committee. They are a civic society who are independent and have 200 members. But the council chairman, Steve Middleton, said it was a council tradition to hear reports from other civic bodies. He said, "It's an historical thing that's gone on for many years. We have someone to go along to the Chamber of Commerce who reports back to us what they're doing." The council nominated and approved Town Councillor Roy Gentry as a member of the Town Trust for the 4-year period. Discussions were also held over replacing former trustee Mark Luckham, with nomination likely to come before the next meeting in May.
Market stalls set to stay as contract renewed. Council bosses pledged to keep market stalls in Winchester's High Street and to renew the contract of the current organisers. The markets, which are run by Southern Market Traders, SMT, on the council's behalf, have seen a major increase in traders. The latest figures came before Winchester City Council's cabinet last Wednesday. Estates officer Kevin Warren said the number of vendors had risen 157% compared to the previous year. During that time, stalls have been extended from their traditional home in Middlebrook Street into the High Street. Mr. Warren added that the move was the catalyst behind the market's revival. Last summer's switch angered some existing shopkeepers who said the High Street was too crowded on market days. Councillor George Beckett, who leads the council, said talks were organised by Winchester Business Improvements District. Following those discussions, most of the problems had been solved, he added. This is now an outstanding success story, and like all outstanding successes, there are a few details that need to be dealt with. Councillor Beckett added that a few shopkeepers and residents were still against the market's expansion. However, the Cabinet heard 19 out of 20 shoppers stopped at random for a recent survey said they were in favour of the new location for market stalls. Cabinet members voted to keep the High Street market stalls and to renew SMT's contract for another year.
Help us keep the elderly fit. A Winchester charity is appealing for funding to support a fitness programme for the elderly. Winchester Live at Home Scheme has been running the Fit for Life programme for the past 3 years, helping people, including those recovering from falls. The programme has worked with more than 100 people, but a 3-year government grant has now expired, leaving the charity in need of extra funds. Claire Morgan, manager of Winchester Live at Home Scheme, said she was determined to keep the programme running but needed support. She said, "The scheme has gone from strength to strength. We run 2 exercise classes and are looking to expand to 3, and the walking group has tripled in size since it began. But we are now looking at how we can continue to fund the scheme and are interested to hear from anyone who could assist with this." The charity celebrated the scheme at its recent AGM, with Deputy Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, cutting a special cake in its honour. And there's a smiling picture of Alice Larden, who is an exercise class member, Deputy Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson, Matt Allgood of Age UK, Royal Hampshire County Hospital physio Cathy O'Connor, and fitness volunteer Joe White. And actually, it's Alice, the exercise class member, who's cutting into a beautiful square iced cake, which I'd have thought was rather a naughty treat for a Fit for Life initiative.
Oh, you've got to have some treat sometime.
Next one is tree plantings mark couples' special celebrations. This is accompanied by lots of pictures, which I'll describe shortly. Jubilee celebrations started early in Winchester last weekend with a pair of commemorative tree planting ceremonies. Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire, Andrew Kent, visited Littleton Recreation Ground and the March Hare Pub in Harestock to plant the English oak trees. He was joined at both sites by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Barry Lipscomb, and several couples celebrating 60 years or more of marriage. The couples were presented with flowers by 10-year-old children from the parish, and they were born during the last Jubilee year. Despite the rain, around 50 people turned up at the March Hare at 11 a.m. for the first ceremony, accompanied by music from the buglers of the nearby St John Moore Barracks. Then about 100 gathered at the recreation ground at noon, where 7 couples from Littleton were presented with flowers. One couple who went along to both ceremonies was Ernest and Muriel Witts, who are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary in August. Mrs. Witts, 83, of Dale Close, Littleton, said, "Apart from the weather, it went very well, and it was nice to see lots of people involved, especially in Littleton, where we have so many things coming up for the Jubilee." Mr. Witts, also 83, added, "It was a nice idea to have the 10-year-olds present the flowers. It's nice to have our anniversary in the same year as the Jubilee, but I think ours is special enough as it is." Littleton and Harestock Parish Council Chairman Derek Hickman said, "This was a very successful first event in the planned programme of activities to celebrate Her Majesty the Queen's Diamond Jubilee in the parish, and more is to come over the weekend of June the 2nd to 5th. Both trees were between 10 and 15 years old and were donated by Holmes and Son Nursery based in Littleton." And there is a picture of the Lord Lieutenant, Deputy Lord Lieutenant, I beg his pardon, planting the tree, accompanied by the Lord Lieutenant and Councillor Derek Hickman, Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Barry Lipscomb, Reverend Julian Montague, all standing round looking quite happy. And there's pictures of 4 of the couples who were celebrating their 60th anniversary. Pamela and David Langton, Ted and June Cole, Pat and Philip Lloyd, and Doug and Pat Buckingham.
Scouts hail record numbers. Hampshire Scouting membership has reached an all-time high. It grew again last year by 3%, more than twice the rate of the previous year. County Commissioner Adam Jollins said, "We passed the 20,000 milestone and recorded our highest figures this century, 20,426. an increase of 604 members. We grew in all youth sections and we gained nearly as many girls as boys. Numbers were up in nearly all districts, and Mr. Jolin said, we grew our adult leaders faster than our youth members, which prepares us well for the future. The boom comes after reports revealed that scouting has become more than just tying knots, reading maps and lighting campfires. It is also about scouting for a job. Today's scouts are increasingly focusing on preparing for the job market by working for a range of skill-based badges. It is helping to boost their CVs at a time when the nation's teenage dole queues are escalating. Scouts are shunning sports such as snowboarding and skating and learning to build electronic circuits, solving plumbing problems and insulating homes. The trend towards more job-based badges is attracting growing numbers of savvy girls, many of whom want to boost their applications for further education and university. Last year, for the first time ever, more girls joined the Scout Association than boys, 4,330 compared with 3,796.
New battle looming over plans for phone masts. The first of several new applications by Vodafone to build masts in Winchester has been made. It wants to install a 13.8-metre high base station at the corner of Stony Lane and Stockbridge Road in Wick. It is the third time that the firm has sought permission at the site, having withdrawn two previous schemes. The phone company said last month that it was developing proposals for several base stations in Winchester. The masts will be shared with another firm, O2. One of the most controversial is for Stoke Road in Abbots Barton, where residents blocked the road to protest last time around. They have pledged to fight again, although an application is yet to be officially made. However, Winchester City Council has received the paperwork for the site in Wick, which has also been controversial. Lydia Revett, who is leading the campaign in Wick, said, "This mast will be an absolute monster. It'll be around 4 metres higher than a three-storey building." She added that the proposals seem to be no different to the scheme that was withdrawn a year ago. What's so frustrating for the community is that every time a new application is made, we have to start all over again, she said. Objections made by residents to the previous schemes do not count, so they will all have to object again, she added. Vodafone says the extra masts are needed to improve coverage for 3G customers.
Keith takes over as leader of the city Tories. Winchester Conservatives have elected a new leader to replace George Beckett, who is standing down at next month's local council elections. Keith Wood, pictured here, will lead Tory councillors on Winchester City Council after the elections on May the 3rd. He takes over from Councillor Beckett, who is not standing for re-election in Compton and Otterbourne. Councillor Wood, who represents Sparsholt, has been the lead member for finance and produced a budget which the Tories said avoided cuts in services without increasing council tax. He worked for the Bank of England for many years, then the International Monetary Fund. Councillor Beckett will continue as leader of the council until May. He hopes to be the Conservative candidate for the new role of Hampshire Police Commissioner.
PTA backs plans for new school, but consultation process poor. Plans for a new primary school in Winchester to cope with spiralling pupil numbers have been backed by parents at a school earmarked for expansion, according to a survey. The County Council is currently consulting the public on either longer-term enlargement of existing schools with temporary classrooms or building a new primary on the site of Rotherley Boarding House at the Westgate School. Now the Parents of Teachers Association, PTA, at Western Primary School in Fourflood has surveyed parents for their views. Western is set to take an extra 30 pupils this September, expanding from a two-form to a three-form entry school. He could have more than 600 pupils on roll within 7 years. Initially, one double temporary classroom would be sited on the school playing field. Other schools set to expand include St Peter's Catholic, Hairstock, Winnell and Week. The survey results show more than half of parents at Weston would like to see a complete new school built in the city with redrawn catchment areas for other primaries. However, the council's proposal to turn the Westgate into a combined primary and secondary school for pupils aged 4 to 16 was unpopular. Only 8 out of 223 individuals who responded to the survey thought this was a good idea. But nearly a third of parents backed turning Rotherley into an infant school and making Weston a junior school. Other findings included that the vast majority, 95%, were concerned that increased pupils numbers would strain existing facilities at Weston, such as the hall, staff room and IT suite. Most were opposed to temporary classrooms as a long-term solution to the shortage of places, and 7 out of 10 rated the local authority's consultation approach to school place planning in 2012-15 as either poor or very poor. Ian Palaccio, chairman of the PTA, said, "I think many parents thought this was an ideal opportunity to turn one of these sites into a primary school and the other site into a junior school. To my mind, that makes the most sense. Hampshire already have 3, 4 and even 5 form entry infant and junior schools, for example in Fair Oak."
Big lottery fund fixes it for charity. A Winchester-based charity has received a massive financial boost for the next 3 years. The Big Lottery Fund has awarded £7.2 million to Fixers, a project which works with young people aged 16 to 25 to create social action campaigns. Fixers is part of the Public Service Broadcasting Trust, PSBT, and encourages young people to get involved in community and artistic projects such as anti-bullying films, healthy eating campaigns, and online support groups for drug, alcohol and mental illness issues. Staff confirmed the money will create around 70 new jobs, with at least 25 to be based at the head office in Winchester. Alison Pope, Director of Projects at Fixers, said, "We are creating a mix of new jobs with two main strands of focus. We will have more youth workers working directly with young people and helping them to devise projects. And we will have more creative people, like artists and filmmakers, helping make these projects a reality." Margot Horsley, PSBT Chief Executive, added, "I have been humbled by the effort and commitment that these young people have shown in making their contribution to society in their individual ways. On behalf of all the young people that we have worked with and those we have yet to meet, we thank the Big Lottery Fund for enabling us to reach young people all over the UK." Peter Ainsworth, chairman of Big Lottery Fund UK, said, "Fixers has already proven that it can make a difference to young people within their communities by creating innovative campaigns that address issues of their choosing, whilst helping change negative stereotypes." Formerly known as ITV Fixers, the project will use some of the funding to broadcast some of its projects on the television channel, with two Fixers films picking up Royal Television Society awards last year. The charity has also used the money to secure new premises in St Thomas Street, Winchester, and is set to move from its current Southgate Street office next week. More than 5,000 young people have taken part in 600 Fixers projects across the country, including more than 100,000 hours of voluntary work. PSBT is now aiming to involve around 21,000 new Fixers over the next 4 years.
wider choice of healthy meals for Hampshire's pupils. As children head back to school after the Easter break, they are tucking into more of their lunchtime favourites as Hampshire County Council Catering Services, that's HC3S, launched the new school meal menu for summer 2012. The new menu, which began on Monday, includes two delicious new vegetarian dishes, both produced locally from a Ringwood supplier, individual vegetarian toad in the hole, and a vegetarian lettuce slice. These will join a variety of pupils' favourites such as roast dinners, pizza and fish on a Friday. Thanks to the success of such tasty lunchtime dishes, around 7 million meals are expected to be served in the county's primary school by the end of the current school year, based on current take-up figures. More than one in three pupils, around 34,000 children each day, are now eating a school meal, putting Hampshire's percentage meal take-up to its highest level. Figures for the spring term show a 6% increase on at the same time last year. Throughout the year, youngsters can select a main meal, vegetables and salad, together with either potatoes, pasta or rice. Dessert is a choice of fresh fruit or handmade pudding such as raspberry love cake or oaty apple crumble and custard. Every meal combines to make up a third of the recommended daily intake of vitamins and minerals for a child over the weekly menu, which is also helps support learning in the classroom. HC3S provides meals for over 448 primary and special schools, plus 31 secondary schools across the county, using an array of ingredients from around 26 local suppliers. For six consecutive years, HC3S has also been recognised for keeping school meals free from artificial colourings and preservatives. All the fish on the menu come from well-managed sustainable fisheries. HC3S also has a Good Chicken Award for Compassion in World Farming for meeting strict animal welfare criteria. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Ken Thornber, said HC3S works closely with schools, pupils and parents to create varied menus that are healthy, tasty and which are now enjoyed by more pupils than ever before. As well as supporting healthy eating, Hampshire school meals also play an important role in supporting the local economy. £2 million per year is spent buying a variety of ingredients sourced from local producers. The price of a school meal is for 2012-13 has been frozen for a fourth consecutive year and remains at £2.
Help us to help others, says charity. They are relatively small amounts of money that can make a massive difference to the lives of those fighting cancer. But one Hampshire cancer charity is struggling to help all those in need after demand for financial help soared by 14% in just 12 months. Wessex Cancer Trust is now appealing for donations to ensure that families devastated by the disease have a chance to share precious moments together that will last a lifetime. As the current economic situation hits hard, more and more cancer patients in the county are becoming increasingly dependent on the charity's grant-giving scheme to help with practical and financial needs. In the last year alone, the charity gave more than £14,477 out in grants to 119 patients in Hampshire. In total, the charity received 301 requests for grants, with only 119 of those being successful. And it is a similar story across the Wessex region, which includes Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire, the Isle of Wight and the Channel Islands, which has seen a 25% increase in grants in the last year. Wessex Cancer Trust says it fears the situation will only get worse and it will be forced to turn away more people unless it gets help from local fundraisers. Sally Hall, Chief Executive of Wessex Cancer Trust, said, "We can react quite quickly to the needs of cancer patients and their families. However, the dramatic increase in the number of requests for financial help has been overwhelming, and we are crying out for funding to help people who find themselves in the most desperate situation of their lives. If you can help in any way, Please do get in contact with us.
Tucking in for Heroes. A cake sale in Winchester to raise money for Help for Heroes has raised around £3,000. About 1,000 cakes were sold at the Brooks Centre and at St Morris's Covert in the city for the charity that helps wounded servicemen injured in Iraq and Afghanistan. Winchester was the location of the first colossal cake sale 3 years ago, and it has grown to 500 sales across the country. Belinda Mitchell, one of the organisers, said, "It was an extraordinarily successful day, but wouldn't happen without the support of local people. All the cakes come from the Winchester district." She added, "There is a deep-seated need in the British public to support their troops." And there's a very colourful picture here of 3, 6, 7 ladies and 2 gentlemen, all standing behind a table laden with goodies, beautiful cakes, and a huge sort of teddy bear dressed in army uniform with 2 children standing in front of him.
Lead thieves make a return visit to a church. A Mian Valley church has been attacked by thieves for the second time in 2 weeks. Lead was taken from the roof of St Mary and All Saints Church in Droxford on Good Friday evening after a similar robbery on March the 27th. The combined worth of the lead from both robberies is thought to be around £4,000. Now parishioners are petitioning the diocese to replace the lead on the roof with steel to avoid any further thefts. Churchwarden Elizabeth Stewart of Police Station Lane, Droxford, said, "It's very upsetting, especially as it happened on the evening of Good Friday. It's very much a village-wide feeling that we should put something else up there instead, and steel is the least attractive to thieves." Her husband, Ninian Stewart, a parishioner at the church since 1944, added, "We use smart water, a colourless liquid only visible under ultraviolet light that can help identify burglars months after the crime as a precaution. But it proved totally ineffective, possibly because we could only afford to put it round the edges of the lead." Mr. Stewart added, "The thieves had damaged tombstones during the raid, including that of Captain Jasper Haynes, who took part in an operation that captured a German Enigma machine during the Second World War." And there's a picture of this awful roof stripping with lead stuck up and absolutely clear tiles showing without any cover. Bad.
Mayors help to roll away the ears at club. Club members were bowled over by the turnout of Winchester mayors, past and present, for their 200th anniversary. Hyde Abbey Bowling Club was founded in 1812 and held its first meeting of the new season last Sunday. It has become a tradition that the first wood of the new season is bowled by the Mayor of Winchester, and Councillor Barry Lipscomb, who currently holds the historic office, was on hand to do the honours. Yet he was not alone, as several other past mayors came along to mark the club's bicentenary. They included Neil Baxter, who started the tradition of Winchester's first citizen opening the new bowl season. The other past mayors attending included Richard Izzard, Dominic Hiscock, Chris Pines and Michael Reed. Before the first wood was bowled, Councillor Lipscomb invited club members to the mayor's official residence, Abbey House, for a reception. After that, the group headed from the Broadway to the club's green, which is beside River Park Leisure Centre. And there's a picture of Barry Lipscomb and members of the Hyde Abbey Bowling Club in the Hyde Abbey Gardens. And the ladies look very smart in blazers and white trousers and a neckerchief.
Mumpreneurs Claire and Maria team up. Two mumpreneurs have joined forces in Winchester. Claire Burley and Maria Harvey met less than 2 months ago, but now Maria's shop, Parklife Kids, is selling Claire's scooter accessories. Both mothers of 3 had traded in their jobs in order to set up their own children-orientated businesses. There is a really interesting thing with women who are making the choice to leave pretty successful careers. I thought I was unusual, and I have found that other women have done a similar thing, said Claire. She founded one-stop website Scoot last year, selling children's scooter accessories, which all came about from her own experiences as a mother on the school run. She designed a scooter hook that could sit on a pram or buggy. In the process of being patented and came up with eye-catching accessories, including a strip of LED lights, a retro-style hooter, and streamers to help mums distinguish between their children's scooters. The 41-year-old of Step Terrace, Winchester, left her job doing energy regulation for an oil and gas company at the end of last year to focus on the business. However, she found it difficult to get the word out about the products, purely through the internet, because people did not necessarily know such a product existed. However, her business received a boost when she teamed up with fellow mumpreneur Maria of Green Hill Road, Fallflood. Like Claire, Maria left her job as a corporate lawyer to set up Park Life Kids in Upper Brook Street a year ago, which sells children's shoes, clothes and accessories. The two women met at a trade show in February, which led to Claire's products going on the shelves at Park Life Kids. With advice from Maria, Claire turned to wholesaling, and Scoot has taken off, selling products to well-known names like Jojo Mama Baby and Micro Scooter, as well as to businesses in the Netherlands, Germany, Spain and even Lebanon. Claire said she was selling to between 30 and 40 shops across the country. And we have a photograph of the two young women, Maria and Claire, and they've had to kneel down beside two of the small scooters, which are very colourful and attractive.
First PACT meeting for Winnall. The police will be holding a community meeting for residents of the Highcliffe, Winnall and Abbots Barton areas of Winchester. The first PACT, Partnership and Communities Together, meeting for these areas will be held at Winnall Fire Station in Eastern Lane next Monday, April the 23rd at 7 p.m. The aim of this meeting is for members of the public to set local policing and community safety priorities by discussing local issues with the police and their key partners. Sergeant Matt Fansett said, "If you believe there are issues within your community, this is your chance to discuss them with us and our partners."
Serial offender sent to jail for 5 years. A gang member who targeted Hampshire supermarkets and stole more than £13,000 worth of drink has been locked up for 5 years. Serial offender Stephen McCarthy, 28, and others smashed shop windows with bricks to steal the goods in night raids on stores in Winchester, Stockbridge and Fareham. Southampton Crown Court heard McCarthy had also been involved in a struggle with a van driver delivering goods to a shop in Shirley. McCarthy of Radcliffe Road, Southampton, admitted burglary, theft, causing actual bodily harm, resisting arrest and breaching a community order. Asking for two other burglaries to be considered, he was jailed for 5 years. Peter Asterisk, defending, told Judge Peter Rowles, QC, that McCarthy welcomed prison because it would keep him away from drugs. He described how McCarthy had been on the run from court when he was found in a crack house in Southampton, dependent on crack cocaine and heroin. "He was in an extremely bad condition," said the barrister. "To say he is remorseful would be an understatement," added Mr. Arteris.
This is a chronicle from the past. Before there was a Brook shopping centre, there was the central car park, and before the car park, there was the Brooks. The name, dating to Tudor times, referred to the ancient watercourses running beneath Winchester, the main supply for the many hundreds who made this part of town their home. But in the headlong post-war rush to improve the city, the houses were swept away and the people shifted, not altogether unwillingly, to new council homes on the periphery. The cleared area was a surface car park for 3 decades and more. But the Civic Fathers had long had plans for it. And in the early 1990s, it was turned into a covered marl, though not before extensive archaeological excavations of Roman, Saxon and medieval Winchester in 1987 to 88. The photograph I'm looking at from Friarsgate takes in the market up a brook and St George's streets, looking towards St Thomas Church and the law courts on the skyline.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lynn Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in your wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.